Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Next Generation, a podcast about fatherhood. Really, it's about parenthood, I think, in the long term. But it's me, David Chen, the host of this podcast. Joining me for every episode, as always, is my brother, Michael Chen. Michael, it is, what, as we're recording this, day, I want to say, 8
yep.
of your newborn's life. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. How's it going? How are you feeling?
Every time you ask me that, I think it's, I'm only going to get more tired until a certain point. I think like,
It's like a parabolic, right? It's
like, my stress level will increase until I think there's like a somewhat of a breakthrough at like 2 weeks, and then, 3 months I heard is kind of the next one. So, we'll see. It's like a bimodal thing as far as I understand.
So this episode that we're recording right now is The Birth Part 2. We did The Birth Part 1 last week. We talked about the harrowing process that your wife, JC, went through to birth your child. And there was a bunch of little other topics that you had written down that you wanted to discuss about that whole process that we're going to get to on this episode of the podcast. So let's get into it. But before we do that, I just want to mention real quick again, you can find episodes of this podcast at thenextgeneration.com. Email us at thenextgeneration@gmail.com. And I think this is probably the last episode we're going to record before I start telling other people about the podcast. So starting next episode, there's probably going to be more emails and thoughts and stuff like that, which will be very critically filtered, Michael, before they're presented on the podcast. But let's get into it.
All right.
One of the questions I had that you had written down on the show notes document was, quote, how they avoid swapping children at birth these days, end quote. Now, this is a topic I'd read stories about before of kids that had accidentally been swapped at the hospital, right? Have we talked about this, Michael, before you had your child? Like, is this something we had discussed? I don't remember, but it's definitely something that was on my mind.
It's quite possible it's come up because it seems like the kind of thing that you would think about and talk to us about. Yeah.
So there's been these stories in the past of like kids who have been born at the hospital and they've been accidentally switched. So like two sets of parents took home each other's child and raised them for years, not knowing that they had taken home the wrong child. And that's just like a terrible situation for everyone, because what do you do when you discover that the switch has been made? Do you just return the kid to the correct parent? Like, they've already developed attachments and connections with the wrong parent, quote unquote. And it just like always felt like a terrible situation for everyone. And I would not wish it upon anyone. And I was a little bit worried about this for you, but then you wrote this in the show notes. So I'm like, oh, well, Michael must have an answer for how they avoided accidentally swapping your kid with another one at the hospital. So how did they do this?
Yeah, I asked the labor nurse before the baby was delivered how this works. And it seems pretty hard to swap them these days. So the basically immediately after the child comes out of the womb, they put a little tag on the child around their ankle. Mm. Parents get the same tag each, and essentially, so during you know, the follow up after labor and delivery is postpartum care, and every time the nurses came into the room, they compared the bracelets.
Wow.
There's the bracelet also doubles as a there's like an RFID chip, I think. And if the baby is within some range of the exit doors of the ward, they like the whole unit goes into lockdown if the baby hasn't been discharged yet. So it also doubles as a baby
like a
theft
security.
Prevention. Yeah.
Security. Because I guess like some crazies out there go in and might want to steal a baby, I guess is the idea.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. So that's actually really cool. And you said postpartum care that happened while you were at the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also my son never left our site. He was in the room the entire time. So I know sometimes, especially if something is wrong, like the baby has to go to the NICU or anything like that, then, you know, the baby would be separated from the parents for some time. But I think if everything is relatively normal, the baby stays with the parents pretty much 24/7 after labor.
Got it. Well, I'm glad that your son is your son and that you don't have to worry about that.
I have a very high degree of confidence that this is the son that was birthed from my wife's womb.
It's like at least 80% chance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like 80%, 81%, maybe slightly higher than that chance. Mm-hmm. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, Michael, during the last episode, you said that you read an entire book while you were taking care of your wife, JC, in labor last week. What was that book, and do you have thoughts on it?
Yeah, so the book is called How Not to Hate Your Husband After Having Kids.
That doesn't feel like you're the target audience, though.
I think it's good for both. Both parents to read it.
I'm being facetious. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, I heard a podcast episode recently where Conan O'Brien and Michelle Obama were talking about what having kids does to a marriage, and I think Conan O'Brien basically gave this analogy that it's like he was watching like cars being built on a factory floor. And at one point, this like big arm like turns like picks up the car and like shakes it, just to see what comes loose. And that's what having kids is like for a marriage. Just like it's just this huge trauma on the marriage, and like any imperfections that were there will come out. We're still very early stages. Basically, all we're doing is keeping the child alive. That's like your whole job for the first couple months. The baby has no personality almost. Can't really interact with you. It's can't really even see you, focus on you, or anything like that. Everything's just kind of a blur. But eventually we're gonna start making more decisions about how to raise this child. And I think like there's gonna be a lot more of those imperfections that become revealed.
Well, how was the book?
So the book, I was a little annoyed by the book. I thought it actually gave a lot of really good advice. So it goes into like a whole broad range of topics of like home cleanliness, like equity, like equitable distribution of like labor in the household. Yeah. It talks about eventually like how do you talk about money? How do you like fight in front of the kids and stuff like that? So I think it covers like a pretty broad range of topics. I actually thought it would specifically deal with like postpartum blues and postpartum depression. But it doesn't really talk that much about it. It talks mostly about like the decisions you have to make together as the child gets older. The thing that really offended me is kind of her tone that she took towards like men in general. That like I think like the book had this framing that the whole like cultural revolution has happened where men have started to step up in the household more, but they're still like fairly useless. Most of them, like I found the tone to be like fairly condescending, and some of the stuff that she talked about was she had this like anger problem, and her husband would like shut down and like not really like lift a hand unless he was like specifically asked to do that, and how he basically needed to be like complimented and stuff like that. There was this one particular example that stuck out where she was basically talking to her friends about like her husband's needing compliments in order to be motivated to help out around the house. I'm not sure like how true that is for like many men, but she talks about how like being a woman is like a thankless task. Like all the stuff that women do around the house, like a lot of it is just invisible and like thankless. But in her like her solution was to like basically like give compliments to the men as if they were like dogs. and then like using that to like get what she wanted rather than like maybe like figuring out some way that she could feel appreciated for her work too. Like that in my mind, that's like kind of the ideal outcome, is like everyone feels appreciated for the stuff that they do around the house. And in terms of taking care of the kids. So it's just like this like overall idea that like the men don't even like want to help, and you have to like, you have to pull these like levers to get them to help. And I found it offensive as a man who does want to help. But I also
this
know
is,
yeah,
this
like,
is something, yeah, this is something that I've had to deal with, you know, in my household as well, which is you know, mom and dad's upbringing had of us had some flaws. I think it is very fair to say, right? There were some issues in the parenting. I think given what they were facing, like the economic situation they're facing, the number of hours they had to work, all of the fact that they were immigrants and their English was imperfect, that they did a pretty good job. But there were some flaws. That said, one thing that I guess I'm now realizing, I've realized in recent years, is that I don't know about you, Michael, but mom kind of really impressed upon me the value of a well-kept household from a cleanliness and organization perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And did what she could to motivate me to clean up around the house. And so I just always assumed that when I was going to be in a household with someone else, that there'd be like a, you know, 50-50 division of labor for the household. And that like, mm-hmm. we are in a new era of like men actually doing stuff, and that's the way it's going to be. And while that is, if anything, by the way, I should say in our household, it's closer to like 60 to 70, you know, 40-30 in favor of me doing the housework, right? Mm-hmm. But what I have learned from people in our social circles is that that is decidedly still not the case, that mm-hmm. most men are still lazy slobs. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what that's the mentality that this book is kind of speaking to. And which, by the way, it's a book that is not, again, I was joking, but it is kind of not written for you, right?
Right.
This is the kind of the societal context that you and I are coming into, which is like the presumption that men will be lazy. And we need to like do a lot to fight against that, not just with words, but with like actually doing things, which I think you and I, you know, do a relatively good job of. But you know, how does that sit with you, what I just said?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Like, I actually, you know, thinking about mom and dad, I don't know where I got my views from. Like, I think, you know, like you said, mom is really good about cleaning around the house.
Yeah.
Dad was working a lot, you know, and I don't remember him doing as much around the house. Like, I remember he would cook for us, and like both mom and dad are great cooks.
Yes. But I remember him also like cleaning a lot. Like, he'd always like wipe the floor down with like a wet rag after meal
in the kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah. In the kitchen. Yeah. So I think they basically, I mean, dad was less of, dad did less to impose his will upon us. Like, he didn't say like, "Hey kids, mm-hmm. I'm wiping the floor mm-hmm. and this is something you should do as well." But that's something mom would do all the time.
Yeah.
Is she, whatever she would do, she would point out that she was doing it.
Yeah.
And say like, this is something, hey, if you like, you need to like clean up as well. And it was always like impressed upon me, oh, like I need to like, you know, do stuff around the house. And honestly, when I kind of started learning that this is not the case, like many husbands need to be motivated or told to or incentivized to do their fair share, it's disappointing to me.
Mm-hmm.
To hear that, because you know that's the perception you and I are fighting against, and it's a perception that makes it into books like How Not to Hate Your Husband After mm-hmm. Kids by Jancy Dunn.
I also remember dad, I mean, like dad, I remember did all like the outside stuff, anything
like the yard work,
like shoveling the driveway and stuff like that, taking out the trash. I remember like towards the time we moved away from Boston, he had to like scrape snow off the roof with this like gigantic, I don't even know what this device is called. It's just like this like huge, long, really long pole that just like scrapes snow off of a roof. Like, it's just for scraping snow off the roof. It looked really like not like something someone who's 60 years old who should be doing. But yeah, dad definitely, like, don't get me wrong, dad definitely did a lot of stuff. I remember, like, I think one of the reasons I feel like him doing stuff around the house was not as like ingrained in my head was the way that, like you said, the way that he imposed these chores on us. Like if dad asked us to do stuff, he would ask us to do stuff, and then if we didn't do it in time, he would do it. And then but if mom asked the same stuff of us, if we didn't do it in time, she would continue asking in a more urgent and more urgent manner until it got done. So their approach to like getting us to do stuff was completely different.
Yeah. So what is some of the good advice that came out of this book? You said you didn't like it, or you didn't like the tone, but was there any like a couple pieces of advice you are holding on to?
Yeah, I mean, most of the book was very good. Like, I think the tone is like, and there were only a couple of sections where the tone really it was like intense enough to get to me. But there's a lot of stuff around like conflict resolution and money stuff that I think JC and I will still we've still yet to run into. As a couple that like I want to start exercising as we get closer. Right now it's not that important. Like the most important thing is
anything specific though? I guess I'm curious, like if someone's listening to this and they want like a taste of what advice this book offers.
Yeah. How your kids see you fight.
What is the book's advice on this?
So if you fight in front of your kids, you need to make up in front of them too. Like just as a very simplistic thing, like, don't lash out in anger in front of your kids, as best you can avoid it. One of her examples. So the author struggled with anger issue.
Problems.
Yeah. Anger issue and like calling her husband names and stuff. And their therapist told her to basically go into a room and have a picture of her child, and like, because obviously like calling your husband names in front of your kid is gonna like permanently damage them, right? And so the therapist recommended that, you know, before she yelled at her husband, to go into a room, look at a picture of her kid, and to tell that picture, like, you know, my anger is more important than you right now. So this idea that like, yeah, everything you do impacts your kids. So that's one example, is like, you know, like how to fight productively. And it talks a little bit about biology behind that.
My anger is more important than you to the picture. Like that is a good behavior, or is that going to force her to say,
this is bad. I shouldn't do this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like, I mean, like when she yells at her husband in front of her kids, that's a value that she's acting on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, you know, that's an example. There's a lot of stuff around like cleanliness and like dividing the chores equally. There's a lot of like pretty practical tips about like how to keep the house clean. There's stuff that we've kind of already lines with stuff that we're going to do. Like once they start getting toys, have like a one in one out system where you get a new toy, they have to donate an old one. It kind of keeps the house tidy and also teaches them about generosity. So there's just like a lot of like small practical, like tactical tips that you can do, and things about like how you relate to one another, like how you communicate. So yeah, I mean, I'm painting broad strokes. This isn't like a book review podcast or anything. So, I found it to be very practical.
The book is How Not to Hate Your Husband After Kids. It's by Jancy Dunn. We'll link to it in the show notes. Okay. Let's get to the rest of the agenda for today. One of the items on the agenda was, quote, how my priorities have initially changed after seeing my son, end quote. So this is a big question I had, Michael, which was, after your son was born, did it change your priorities, your view on life to see your son? And I have to say, when you sent the photo of your son to the family thread, it made me really emotional. You know, like I was hit by emotion unexpectedly, just knowing that this was a being that you guys have created, and also that the Chen line is going to continue, you know, and also, of course, your kid is very cute too. So I got really emotional seeing the picture, and also knowing like I had vague sense of what you had endured, you know, but I didn't have a true like TikTok, which you gave last episode. And so I knew that it must have been like something that was hard won. So, you know, I had a big, basically I'm saying I had a big reaction to it, and therefore I'm sure you must have had an even bigger reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your reaction?
Yeah. I mean, when they saw like when a C-section happens, there's like a big, I think I talked about this last week or last episode. They pull up like this huge blue tarp, so that I'm sitting at my wife's head, and I can't see what's happening. And I think they do that because it would like traumatize me. And so there's a big tarp there, and that, but like it's like a blue tarp in front of like a clear tarp. And then when the baby comes out, they pull the blue tarp down a little bit, so I can see the baby for the first time. And
through the clear tarp,
through the clear tarp. I mean that moment was like, people say that there's like a moment when you first hold your child where like everything changes. I don't know that is what happened, but like it hit me pretty hard too, that like this living being is you know my child. And I'm sure that JC would have felt the same way if she weren't like completely conked out on drugs.
Right.
But yeah, she like couldn't, like I was like, oh, hey, it's our son. And she like wasn't, she was like, I she said some nonsense. Like I think she was like in some like drug induced haze. So I think she missed that moment.
Right. Well, she got to have it later, you know?
Yeah. She got to have it later. You know, like she held the kid pretty shortly after, after the surgery was over. So I don't remember, like I think the first time I held him was really in the recovery ward. I didn't really hold him I held him in the surgery room as well. I was like so conked up on adrenaline myself that like I think it was hard to like kind of process those emotions.
Because you had like not been sleeping very well for a couple days at this point, and you were really worried sick about your wife. Actually, during a family FaceTime, you had said that like because of the JC's fever, you were like worried something negative might happen to her at that time. So you were dealing with that as well, yes?
Yeah. I was like really worried that. Like, you know, it's maternal death rate has gone down quite a bit during labor, but it's not zero, you know. This is like a really dangerous thing that happens, you know. So, I was sick with worry for a long time. We had been up for 3 hours at that point and it was like 6 a.m. So, I wasn't like processing my emotions is what I was, what I'm trying to get at, but, it was still, you know, there's still something magical to it. So like, I would say that my priorities shifted gradually, like just thinking through like what kind of parent I wanted to be, like how much time I wanted to give to my child, you know, I think everyone has this struggle of like, work, quote unquote, work life balance, right? Like, you know, this idea that if you work harder, then you have less time for your family, and other pursuits outside life. And so I think like I felt this realignment happening, throughout the course of like our hospital stay and after.
And so when this, bullet point in the agenda or, show document is about how your priorities have initially changed, like can you be more specific about how they have changed?
I think like long term, so you know me and my complicated relationship to work, I feel like I really don't like working a full-time job. And I feel like having a child, I feel even more confident about that like I really want to kind of be in a position that I can be there for my child more than I currently am, like more than my current availability allows with a full-time job. Like I took leave to take care of the child during during his newborn phase, but I'm going to go back to work eventually and not going to have as much time to support JC or the child. So I've just been thinking a lot about that and like how my timeline looks like for, you know, working less in the future. And like there's this idea of, you know, becoming financially independent. I wanted to, you know, I've been thinking about ways to do that so such that like I don't have to work as much in the future, like maybe like work like a, you know, 50% job in the future. I would never want to just stop working entirely. I feel like I still enjoy the mechanical parts of my job. Like I enjoy the I'm a software developer. I enjoy, you know, programming, but I don't love having to program. And I want to basically have more time to pursue my hobbies, to model those hobbies for my child, to spend more time with him in the future and stuff like that. And that was always my long-term goal. And there were a number of ways that I had envisioned myself pursuing that goal, some of which involved like working really hard right now, like working really hard for the next couple of years and figuring out like some way to just become like independently wealthy with like a passive income stream. But I don't think that's what I want to do anymore. I think I want to like try to figure out a more flexible working environment. Like
because don't want to spend the first few years of your child's life working really hard. You're saying yes. Like working your ass off because you want to be there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard to sequence these kinds of things, you know, like it's hard to say like, oh, I'm going to prioritize work first and then later I'm going to prioritize my kids, you know?
Yeah. And so, fortunately you're privileged enough to be able to make some decisions on that front. Right. So,
yeah, I mean like, you know, this podcast is going more broad. And so like, I think I'm a little worried about coming off as tone deaf that I even have this option. Right. But I, of course I do acknowledge the privilege I had, like in the fact that I'm even able to think about like scaling back my employment so that I can prioritize my family more.
Yeah. Okay. We got to talk about the name of the child. Now here's the thing. We're not going to give away what the child's real name is, because, just for privacy reasons. So I'm not going to spend too long on this topic because it's weird to talk about the child's name without saying the name. I'm just going to say the following things. Number one, I recognize the child's middle name as the same name as a friend of yours. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I was very moved when you told me what your son's middle name was, because it was the name of a friend of yours who died tragically while he was very young. And it was like one of like the nicest guys, one of your nicest friends, basically. Most of my brother's friends are assholes. No, I'm just joking, guys. But it was one of your nicest friends and just like an overall great guy. And he died tragically in a freak accident, and it's still something that haunts me, you know. Knowing that your child like had this guy's name to carry on his memory, I thought was very lovely. So but I just wanted to confirm that was in fact like why you'd named your child that middle name.
I mean there was another option of
Are you comfortable sharing the name that you didn't use?
which one?
Because you said you were choosing between a couple name, like first names for your child.
Oh, a couple first names. Yeah. Well, no, not yet. Because if we have another boy, then you might get
see.
That name.
I see. Gotcha.
So the middle name was my good friend's name that did pass. So. We were considering making his middle name Korean because, you know, my wife is Korean and I think her parents would have liked that. But I think they were okay with the child having just like a Korean name, not not being his middle name. My wife's mom suggested a number of Korean names that two of which were like completely ridiculous. We went with the only normal one. I asked my wife if it would be okay if we named his middle name this name, and she was fine with it, and it was just a done deal.
Okay, and then I got to ask about the first name. I can't say what the first name is, but it is, let's just put it this way. It's from a nationality that is typically not associated with Chinese or Korean. Like, it's a very type of name that is not Chinese or Korean.
Yeah. Right? It's like a very European descent.
It's a very European sounding, you know, name, you know, like think of it like Boris or something like that. You know what I mean? Like in terms of how closely associated.
I don't know if it's like that.
Well, I'm just saying you think Boris is like, that's a Russian name, right? This name is like very closely associated with like certain ethnicities or nationalities. Yeah, yeah.
I will say this name is like top 10 or something like that in terms of like recent boys' names. So it's not like, I don't think we're like trying to be too creative about it or too cute.
Yeah.
I will also say picking a first name was extremely difficult. And I will tell you that like we had all these girls' names picked out when we, by the time we found out, like we had like a whole list of girls' names. And we had a couple of boys' names that were like, you know, we were roughly considering. And when we found out it was a boy, like, I think that was the moment when, like, and like picking, like looking through the names that we were considering, that was the moment when we realized that we actually wanted a girl. because we're looking through all these boys' names and we're like, oh, we hate all these names. So it was hard.
You're just like, let's just choose a popular one and be done with it.
No, I mean, like they have apps now, like a Tinder style app where, like it shows the same names to, you know, mother and father, or like the two parents.
Oh, interesting.
And
do you know what the name of the app is?
Is it just baby names? Let me just take a quick look. It might just be baby names, but, and like we had only probably like three names. It's called baby name, singular. we had like, and another thing is also like, you can't name your kid the name of anyone you know, right? Like if you're even remotely close to them, it's just weird.
I mean, I spent quite a bit of time lobbying for the child to be named David, but. It fell on deaf ears, you know?
Yeah. So. I wonder if you understand how weird that would be. Like, I'm sure you do, which is why you, yeah. Like, so yeah, it's weird.
I think it would have been a lovely tribute to your brother, David. But anyway.
Do you know anyone who named their kid their like aunt or uncle's name?
No. Yeah. But that doesn't mean it's not a good, that just means there's no aunt or uncle sufficiently awesome, you know, to warrant that activity. So
anyway, I think I'm right. I think it's weird to name your kid the name of someone that you know, or at least know well. Obviously, like, you know, if you have like a coworker that you like barely associate with, then I'm sure that's fine.
I guess I should ask, are there names that you wanted to use, but you didn't use because it was someone you knew?
Not that I can think of like off the top of my head, because I wasn't even considering doing that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What ultimately swung it for that? It's you use this app and you both liked the name that you ended up choosing.
The name didn't even come from the app. Like JC at one point was like, oh, how about this name? And like, there were like three names in the short list and I really didn't like them all. And she liked this one. So we just went with it.
All right. Well, I'm glad
if you're listening to this
lifelong decision.
Son, if you're listening to this, like we took a long time to figure it out, and this one was the best one. Okay, so that's all I'll say about it.
Okay, okay. Well, congrats on choosing a name.
Yeah, yeah. We put a lot of thought into it. That's all I'll say in my defense.
That's the takeaway.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I had asked you about what your social strategy was for the birth announcement, and you were saying, like, I don't want to share photos of the kid because, like, what if the kid doesn't want their photo online? Very reasonable. But then I was like, well, how are you two going to spread word that you've had a kid? And apparently what you ended up doing was manually texting every single one of your friends with the announcement. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
This was the way you got around the needing to post an announcement online. And it sounds like it was a lot of work. Did you at least have like a piece of text you cut and paste for all the texts?
Yeah, it was basically like so-and-so's name. So-and-so was born on their birthday. He weighed, you know, 6 pounds, 13 ounces. And that was it. Like some party hat emojis.
Yeah.
And yes, it was a huge
You got to throw some slop to the commoners that they'll enjoy, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and that's just like, I was like, wow, you really walked the walk. You didn't just talk the talk. You're like, nope, we're not going to post. You know, by the way, I'm probably going to post some photos of the kid, but with like something covering their face. You know, that's what I was thinking. If we ever want to post photos of the kid, but just like have something cover their face.
Yeah, like Ali Wong, I think, has like she posts pictures of her kids, but there's always like a cartoon smiley face over their
heads. Yeah, yeah. So I think I might, you're comfortable with that, I assume?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. Well, nicely done on the social strategy. Basically, I want to make this clear just to say to people, like, it can be done, right? Like,
yeah,
it's really irritating. It's like, you got to go out of your way, and it's a lot easier to just post it on Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. But it can be done. Like, you can, you know, do the maximum possible to protect your child's privacy and also let everyone know about the good news, right?
Yeah, I will say there's probably friends that we forgot to text.
Yeah, that's a huge downside of this.
Yeah, it is a pretty big downside. But like, you know, the ones that are most important to us, like
so if you didn't get a text,
if you didn't get a text from us, yeah, you mean nothing to us. But yeah, like we tried to remember pretty much everyone that we've been in touch with, you know, relatively recently.
That's the thing is, like, if you haven't been in touch with Mike and JC recently, you wouldn't have gotten a text, right? Like, so in a way, it's on you, person out there listening to this podcast, but for some reason didn't get a birth announcement, right?
I don't think anyone who's listening to this I'd be surprised if anyone who's listening to this would have expected a text about this. that didn't get one.
But I
will say it was a huge pain in the ass. And like, yeah, we were just like sitting in the postpartum care wing, being like, how about this person? How about that? We didn't have like a list written out. It wasn't like the most important thing for us.
Were you just like, oh my gosh, we could just post this on Facebook and be done with it, right?
At no point did that thought cross my mind. I did mention to you, like, I also thought it's like more personal, you know, like this is, you know, some whoever's receiving it like knows that we care about them and like wanted them to know when it happened, you know? So, yeah, I felt like that, you know, there's that added benefit of this like more personal touch rather than like, oh, I'm, you know, spamming this out to my 700 followers on Facebook.
All right. Just a couple more topics. One item on here is, quote, what I'm learning about newborns, unquote. What are you learning about newborns, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, like, but at the time I wrote that, I already kind of felt this way, but like, there are so many different opinions about every little thing. The reason I wrote that down was because like, the nurses would come in and show us like how to do stuff. Like because of COVID, we didn't take that many classes on like, how do you change a diaper? Like, how do you swaddle a baby? Right. Like, we just figured that we would learn that stuff on the fly. And we did, like, the nurses came and showed us how to swaddle, and like they gave us like different tips on like how to change a diaper and like the cleanest way possible and things like that. And what I learned almost immediately was like different nurses had different ways of doing it, and they all felt really strongly that their way was the best. And that was like a really good preview into like the world of parenting information on the internet, where people just like believe that their way of doing things is like unequivocally the best. And yeah, like that, like what I observed among the nurses was like a little microcosm of that. The like how much formula do you need to supplement like a newborn, and stuff like that. So yeah, and like swaddling techniques and like diaper changing techniques, all these like different like micro things that that you could have different opinions on. People will have very different opinions on it, and they will feel super strongly about it. So.
Any way of guiding your own decision making about how to do things? Were you just like, this is what feels the best, or this is what's easiest to do, or anything like that?
Yeah, the way that I do it is like, who was the first one that told me how to do this? That is the way I'm going to do it.
What's the only technique I remember? That's the one. Go ahead.
Well, other things about newborns. So I think like the daytime is not that difficult. The thing that I've learned in the past week or so is that like you actually have a good amount of time, like at least for the men who aren't breastfeeding, you actually have a good amount of time to like kind of do whatever, because the baby's sleeping like 18 hours a day. Yeah. So typically, like what I've also learned is that kids have like this thing called a fussy period. Mm-hmm. And that's like usually like 2 hours or so where they are like kind of inconsolable. And like they'll do things like this thing called cluster feeding, where they'll like want to feed like every like 30 to 60 minutes. And it's like a huge pain in the butt. Our child's fussy period is like 2 to 4 a.m. Most of them are like, most of the ones I've read about are like sometime in the evening. And I'm like extremely jealous that that's not our son. Otherwise, like he's a pretty calm kid, but he just happens to have this like awful period in the middle of the night, which is like really unfortunate. Yeah. So, and then like beyond that, the only other hard thing is from what I can see, I don't actually like personally experience this, is like breastfeeding looks really horrible. And I can't believe that we have survived as a species, like just the difficulty in getting your kid to eat in like kind of the early weeks and months. Just seems like a real evolutionary disadvantage. So I don't know why that tendency evolved in us, but it makes not a lot of sense to me. And I think it's really frustrating for both mom and baby. And I feel like it's probably one of the worst experiences that at least other people within our like kind of friend groups have shared, that it was, you know, similarly bad for them.
So what is horrible about it? Yeah, I explain it.
Yeah, the baby needs to latch and then suck the milk out, and he just doesn't know how to do that. And so you can like kind of guide his head to do that, but like he doesn't want to, or like he falls asleep. It's like seems like a really frustrating experience. And there's like this very like visceral reaction that I think happens too, because this is like, you know, apparently one of the more important like responsibilities of like a mother, right? Is to kind of provide this,
yeah. Our society tells us.
Yeah. I mean, like, of course you can use formula, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, I think mothers have this pressure on them. Yeah. To do that, you know, like, it, you know, like this is like the thing that you do so that your child can survive. And so, yeah, I think like the whole like stigma around it, the mechanics of it are all really terrible. But the other stuff, like, you know, changing poopy diapers and, you know, like, I think that's pretty much it. Like picking them up and soothing them and stuff like that, swaddling them and keeping them warm. Like that stuff is all like really easy. And like you just try to like figure out what problem your kid is encountering and solve it. But like the breastfeeding thing is like a pretty tough nut to crack. And I think it doesn't tend to get better for in the near term.
In the show notes, you also wrote about recovery. Curious how your wife JC is doing, right? She went through this fairly awful experience and, you know, is she back on her feet? Is everything back to normal? Like what's her situation?
Yeah. I mean, most things are like a lot more normal than they were before. Like she couldn't even get up the day after. She has this huge like incision, like in her abdomen. And the recovery it looks like relatively painful to walk still. So she, and like our house has stairs. So, I try to, you know, like fetch stuff around the house for her. But you know, she's on painkillers and stuff like that. But, overall, like things are much better. You also get like really swollen. Like I think with any surgery, they have to give you like tons of fluids. The swelling has gone down quite a bit. So like she looks like pretty normal now. I think still a long way to go. Like the incision is still there. It's still like a pretty big, you know, cut in her abdomen. It's gonna take a lot longer to heal than it has, but like a lot of things have kind of gone back to normal. But like things still hurt sometimes if like she misses like a pain medication dose.
Got it. Well, I'm glad things are mostly back to normal. And I'm sorry it was such a challenging experience for you guys. Mm-hmm. Here, by the way, you've also written the first 24 hours. So is there anything separate from what you've discussed about the first 24 hours, right? You've had the... Is this when, after getting home or after having the kid?
After having the kid, yeah. Like, yeah. The kid just sleeps. like, almost... the whole day. Like they're pretty much just up to like I don't even remember if we fed them to fed him. I'm not sure. I can't even remember. I don't think you need to, because they're still kind of they still have like this reserve of amniotic fluid. Mm-hmm. And they can just like use that to stay nourished. So like a couple things about, you know, post delivery, doctors are looking for, your kid to pee once and to poop once. And they don't discharge you unless that has happened. So they need to just like make
sure
like all the systems.
Discharge you until you discharge, you know what
yes,
I'm saying?
Until the baby discharges. Yeah. That's very yep. good.
Thank you.
Yeah, they need to, you know, make sure like all systems are go and stuff like that. Newborn poop is like a really fascinating thing that I had only, you know, briefly heard some of my friends mention in passing. Newborns, they poop like this like black tarry substance that is not at all like what does poops look like now. It's just like leftover substance from the amniotic sac called meconium. So I found that to be really fascinating too. And like, it doesn't smell or anything. It's just like this like tarry substance, which is really weird. So yeah.
Do you want to talk about some of the difficulties you had after?
Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned it briefly, just as like, you know, staying up in the middle of the night, and things like that. Other things that kind of prompted a lot of alarm from us. So the day we got discharged, actually.
Yeah. So you went home. You yeah. went home with the baby. The whole family was so excited. We're like, yay, you made it out of this ordeal. Everything's great. Yeah. Then later that night, I get this really concerning text message from you that the baby had spit up green, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is very concerning. Like, in general, it's not a good thing when the baby spits up green.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what happened?
Yeah, so the baby spit up green. When you leave, the hospital gives you this like short list of things to call the doctor for.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is if the vomit or like if vomit or spit up, which are two different things, is green. And yeah, like I think it's like fairly obvious that something is wrong because like baby isn't eating anything that's green. You know, it's just eating milk and which is white or yellow in some cases. And yeah, so it was pretty alarming, and we called the nurse hotline, and they're like, yeah, bring the kid to the ER right away. And so yeah, we got to the ER. It was like a really busy night, for whatever reason. And they had to admit my son back into the hospital. What green spit up means is generally that like something has gone all the way, like the food has gone all the way down into the intestines, and like bile has been injected into it, and then it's come back up. And usually, like the most common situation for that is an intestinal blockage of some mm-hmm. sort, which requires a surgical intervention, or else the kid will have like very serious problems. And so we got to the hospital. We did like an abdominal check X-ray, which showed like nothing too concerning, and they did a barium swallow to make sure that like stuff could pass all the way through his digestive system.
Yeah, I've done a barium swallow. It's basically when you swallow barium, and like they're very easily able to detect it when it comes out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and they can trace it like going through your system and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah. And those came back clean. They decided that he didn't have to we would have had to like rush him to like a pediatric surgery center that same night if it had come back with bad results.
What were you feeling at this time? Because you had already gone through this whole ordeal. Like you were already super stressed. I guess you might have felt you were home free because you had gotten the kid home. And then you have to go through this again. Like what was on your mind at that point? Like what was,
yeah, you know, I never really think I'm home free. like I think like
good, good.
There are still so many things that could go wrong. Even like as I'm speaking right now,
right.
Like, you know, like, and so I kind of came home with that mindset that like, obviously like not letting like the anxiety consume me or anything, but with this idea that like, you know, anything could go wrong at any point. Like my kid can start acting really weird and like I'm not really sure how to deal with it and stuff like that. We have to kind of like take that as we go. I didn't expect it to come so soon, to be honest. But like, so the doctors had kind of reassured me that you know, even though the green spit up was really concerning, they weren't seeing a lot to indicate that he was that he had this intestinal blockage. And they talked a little bit about like they said things to kind of reassure me that like sometimes this happens where they have green spit up and then you never see green spit up again, and there was no blockage or anything like that. Like it didn't assure me that much because like they weren't able to tell me like what the cause was in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they did assure me of cases that have existed, and they took a look at him and they're like, yeah, he looks like pretty healthy. And they like press on, like usually they see other signs that he's in distress, like when they press on his abdomen, like it's firm and tender, or like he's like really like screaming a lot when you do that. He's just seemed like a really healthy, like kind of happy baby. Or not. I mean, like newborns are never really that happy. Yeah. They're always like a little bit cranky. So but yeah, like from what they could tell, and also he was still having bowel. Also, like one thing that I've I've never obsessed over bowel movements as much as I have upon having a kid. Yeah, just like you have to count the number of bowel movements and like wet diapers that your kid produces in order to figure out something's wrong. But yeah, I like they didn't see any signs of anything wrong, and so I was like really using that to try not to be too concerned.
Did you have to go back a separate time as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. So two days after that.
So, okay, he does the barium swallow, like everything's fine. You go home for real this time.
No, they kept him overnight.
They kept him
just,
right,
just
yeah.
for continued monitoring. And then like the next day, he had eaten, he had pooped, everything was like looked like it was fine, and they sent us home. So then 2 days after that, he started like throwing up a lot. And it was like normal looking spit up. But like he looked really distressed.
The volume of it was
yeah, up. it was a lot of it. He wasn't interested in eating. They recommended that we come back in for that as well. By the time we got there, he was like completely back to normal. And the doctors looked at him and they're like, we don't really see anything wrong. Like, you know, he might have just had like a couple of sessions where he just like overate and like, you know, couldn't hold all that food in, and or like he had like really, really bad gas and it was just coming up. So no less alarming. When he was at home, he was just like making all these faces, just acting really not normal. It turns out that like, you know, we got home after that and he was just eating. He like was ravenous. And he like ate a bunch of, milk and formula and stuff like that. So I haven't been concerned since then, but that was like, you know, 4 days ago, 3 days ago at this point.
And every time you text me one of these messages updating me, which, you know, I encourage you to do because I want to be there for you to talk to about this stuff. I kind of get this. I'm really freaked out about it. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I'm very worried about it. Like, are you finding that you now have this kind of ambient worry about your kid at all times now? Like, go ahead.
I don't know if I describe it as worry, but it's still like this knowledge that like my kid might be sick or like some other thing that, something could go wrong, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have any expectations that my child will be like totally healthy. I think maybe this started since the fever during labor. It like
and when kind JC of, was had the
yeah
fever.
Yeah when she had a fever and like kind of looking up the things that could happen and how that would manifest. And that, and how it might take time for that to manifest, you know? There's always this like, you know, knowledge at the back of my mind that like something could be wrong. Most of my friends have had like perfectly healthy kids. I'm not like too concerned about it, but you know, like I think I will just, I basically just try to equip myself with like the mental fortitude to deal with it when that does happen.
I think I'm the same way. You know, I don't have a child yet, but I think I'm always just, I kind of just expect things will go wrong, you know, and in general, I'm not surprised. Yeah. And it sounds like you're kind of similar in that regard.
Yeah. 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 I mean, like, we talked a little bit about mindfulness. I think like that is a lot of what gets me through, parenting is like, you know, kind of trying to do away with my expectations of like, I deserve a good night's sleep.
Right.
You know, like trying to like just get rid of that mentality yeah. or like, if I can't get my kid to stop crying, it's because I'm a bad parent. Like just these kind of like narratives that
mm-hmm.
I think just like add to your suffering as a parent, you know, like it doesn't help anyone. It just adds to your suffering. And so I just try to dispel as many of those narratives as possible. I took my kid to the ER. It's not like, oh, I just sit at home and be like, oh, if he dies, then he dies. I act in a way that like tries to, you know, like I try to protect him. I try not to cling to these kinds of things.
All right. Well, I'm not going to say everything's okay because we're on day 8.
Yeah.
And
still a long way to go.
Still a long way to go. But I'm glad that for now you're all three of you are at home. He seems to be healthy. He seems to be doing well. We're all really appreciative of that. So, anything else you want to say? I think we've done a good job of covering these events of your life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that has happened, like just understanding the rhythm that I'm in, and like we're trying to get into like the, like it's hard to really schedule things, like as you know, like how hard it has been to schedule this this podcast recording, but yeah. So like we could talk about that next time as well.
Yeah, next episode, the rhythm of life and so on. But yeah, it's, I'm glad things are going well. I think you got to send more, you know, pictures and videos, to mom and dad.
Yeah.
That's my thinking.
They're really lapping those up. Mike
sent one video that was like 3 seconds long, and dad said he watched it more than 20 times. And you're just, and this is the issue, Michael, is like, if it was me, obviously, there would have already been like 100, you know, pictures and videos already sent. But you are not the media producer of the two of us. So you really got to stretch your, you know, out of your comfort zone, or else you're consigning mom and dad, and to some extent me, to watch the same video, you know, hundreds of times.
Yeah, I mean, so, we're doing the whole 1 second every day thing. You know, we already sent the week one video of that. The reason that I don't take more videos is because he's just doing the same thing. Like he's just sleeping. Like and so like every time he's awake, we try to capture a video of it. He's not able to focus on things right now, but like he'll like, you know, he'll like explore with his eyes. I think like those periods are really precious, like when he's actually awake. And like trying to like track his mom and dad, like he'll try to identify light sources and stuff like that. And he's also like the most calm when he's awake. Like when he's sleeping, like that's when he's really at risk for just screaming bloody murder and stuff like that.
What you're comfortable with. But my encouragement is to dramatically increase the velocity of photos.
I think like that is going to happen naturally as he gets older, and starts to like interact with us more, and like start to do more funny things. Like right now he has like one facial expression and he sleeps almost the entire day. So I know mom and dad would probably get a kick out of.
Yes. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Yeah.
But it does make me feel bad that they can't be here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Until they can be there, Michael, got to up that frequency. Got to up that frequency. All right, dude. Thanks for chatting. Be well. Thank you out there for listening to The Next Generation. Find more episodes of thenextgeneration.com. Email us at thenextgeneration@gmail.com. Michael, thanks for sharing your story and your wife's story with the world. It's meant a lot for me. I'm sure it means a lot for our parents and for anyone else who's listening right now. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you.